Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
I'm Candace LaPage.
Candace, welcome to 2019.
Thank you.
It's been almost a month.
Oh my gosh, I guess it has.
But this is the first new episode of the new year you have done, so... Oh, well... Sorry, there's just a little hand signals there, but that's fine.
I know, I'm trying to... I'd like a little less of everything in my headphones, please.
Gotcha. That wasn't...
I know, we need some... This is live radio.
This is why you don't miss the dress rehearsal.
Oh, man.
All right. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest from pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the... I don't know what to call this. Exciting kid fantasy.
The Arthurian legend.
Arthurian legend of old but new. The kid that would be king. And that's in the second half of the show. For the first half, we are going to talk about some of the movie news from the past week, which includes the Razzies. The nominees for the worst of the year came up this week. And does this year's crop seem especially petty? And the Chainsaw Awards. Yes, the annual nominations for Fangoria's Best of the Year also came out this week, and we'll talk about if Slenderman was robbed. And finally, an article in The Atlantic lays out the complete case against Bryan Singer as a predator, so will the X-Men director finally be the next checkmark on the Me Too to-do list? But before we get to that, there was some other inconsequential awards announced this past week. The annual Academy Award nominations were announced. I have to say, this was an unusual crop of nominees. There was 8 for Best Picture this year. They can have up to 10, but usually they settle for less than 10, but they are. Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. I did like what the Beaverton had to say about it, that it's likely that Black Panther and Black Klansman will be beat by a movie about a white guy who had a black friend at one time.
Yep, yep. I mean, that, yeah. I mean, what else, what can you say about the Oscars? They're trying so hard to be more diverse, and it's so... obvious. Like, they just can't seem to do it naturally somehow.
Yeah, I mean, Green Book is... I mean, it seems like a movie, like, made for the Oscars in the 90s.
Yeah.
Where it's about, like... It's
Driving Miss Daisy only.
Yes. It's Driving Miss Daisy, except Driving Miss Daisy is an Italian mafioso that likes to eat. No disrespect. But yeah, it seems like really kind of out of step in that way, especially when you have Black Klansman, Black Panther, Roma 2.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like a throwback. And when you talk about diversity too, no woman was nominated for Best Director, which seems really bizarre, because I made like a list of some of the women who had, like, movies this year. Like, there was Mimi Leader on the Basis of Sex. Mm-hmm. You would think that a biopic about, like, one of the most popular people on the Supreme Court ever would be a gimme. Mm-hmm. Like, even just as, like, a... You hate to say, like, a... You know, like, like a token nomination.
Yes.
Like, to show off how diverse we are. Karen Kusama, who... Destroyer... has gotten, I mean, maybe it came out a bit too late to get any, you know, buzz going, but there's also Chloe Zhao, who did The Rider, which is another movie with a lot of people who loved it. Critical darling.
Sure, sounded like Oscar bait.
Yeah, and also, like, much like Roma, starred people who weren't actors.
Yeah.
And then there was Lynn Ramsey, who did You Were Never Really Here.
Oh, yeah.
Which is such a grueling piece of cinema, and I mean that in the best possible way. It is hard to get through. But then you had Can You Ever Forgive Me, which Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant got nominations, and I think it also got a Best Adapted Screenplay a nomination. But it was also directed by a woman, Marielle Heller.
And
so it would have been just like so easy
to squeeze her in. You have 2 open spots for women.
Yeah. It seems. it seems they could have done better.
Yeah, it is interesting because you, you know, jokingly sort of said these inconsequential awards. And in some ways, they kind of are. Like, in the lead up to the Oscars, over the last, say, 5 years at least, it feels like people have been talking less about the actual movies and the quality, but about, is there going to be more diversity? Who's going to be the host? And what sort of terrible scandal is going to befall the Oscars this year? And then following that, I mean, it's always, the Oscar films always seem to just kind of, it's just a nice thing to put on your marketing box.
Yeah.
Like, do many, and the thing is that I think people get as much marketing out of Oscar winner as Oscar nominated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see that on the, actually on the poster for Green Book. You see, because it says Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, they're both kind of like on the same plateau. But above Mahershala Ali's name is Academy Award winner Mahershala Ali, and then above Viggo Mortensen, it's Academy Award nominee. But they both look kind of exactly the same. And it makes you think that, you know, it is, you know, you hate to think it's all about a matter of politics now, but it is kind of all about a matter of politics.
It is. And I mean, the other thing with the Oscars, too, is always, it's supposed to be the grand ceremony, excuse me, to award the best of the year. And this was something that started, what are we now, 89 years ago or something like that, when they were putting out 100 films in a year from 5 different, you know, studios. Now it's just like, it's not the best films of the year. It's the best films of the last 4 months. And every once in a while you'll get a few, like, you know, I mean, the fact that Black Panther is even on the list is...
This is the 91st?
91. See, I knew... I remembered the 88th happening at some point in time. I don't know why. Something about that number just stood out in my head.
All the way back to Oscars 88. It's interesting that, you know, it does seem like very staged. I mean, not that it wasn't ever staged, but, you know, the whole a host controversy in that they can't find a host. They can't or everyone seems to be too gun-shy to take it because if you do a good job, there are still people who dump on you. If you do a bad job, there are people who dump on you. The money's not good. There's all this prep. And I think somebody, I can't remember who, but pointed out like a lot of the more recent Oscar hosts, it's like they're two and done. You know, two if you're lucky. If you're good enough, you get a second one.
Yeah.
If you're Seth MacFarlane, you're not. Or if you're Anne Hathaway and James Franco, you're not. But if you're, Ellen DeGeneres, you get two. Jimmy Kimmel, you get two. Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, too. So it makes you wonder if it's all worth it. I do have more gripes about the nominations.
All right, let's hear them. I mean, I have a specific gripe, but we'll listen to yours first.
Okay, well, another one of my gripe, we'll do gripe for gripe. One of my gripes is that they nominated the wrong song for Mary Poppins.
Oh, interesting.
From my count, at least from my point of view, there's only one really memorable song for Mary Poppins, and it is the one where it's Can You Imagine That? And it's like this like great upbeat little number as the kids are taking a bath. But what they nominated was the place where all the lost things go, which is like this sad, sanguine that was not like it's. I think it was one of the weakest songs of the film, but I guess because it has quote unquote meaning, it was not the better one of the better songs of the movie, and certainly wasn't the best song. And on top of it, now there's this controversy that they're only performing two of the song nominees.
This always becomes a whole issue, too. It's ridiculous.
They're doing Shallow and All the Stars from Black Panther. And then everyone else gets to take the year off, even though the one song, which was from RGB, it was sung by Jennifer Hudson, who not a stranger to Oscars or performance.
Oh.
And then, you know, something from Mary Poppins. And again, if it had been, Can You Imagine That? It would have been Emily Blunt, you know, singing and dancing on the Oscar stage, I can't remember the name of the song from when they go to what is ostensibly a burlesque house, and mm-hmm. when they go inside the ceramic pot, you have to see the movie, where it's Lin-Manuel Miranda and Emily Blunt singing and dancing. That would have been fine, but you know they're not gonna. It's only gonna be Lady Gaga and Kendrick Lamar. So,
yeah, that's an interesting choice they've made there. So, just on that too, I would argue. I feel like "Shallow" isn't the best song from A Star Is Born either.
No, it's definitely those ass in those jeans song.
Yes, that's the one.
I would have loved to have seen that performed on the Oscars. Like, maybe do a medley?
Oh, yeah, that would be great. Yeah, no, I can't think of the name of the song right now, but I would argue the last song of the film is certainly the most powerful across the board.
Like,
narratively, the performance, the production of it is all, you know, I would, Shallow is fine. It's a good song.
Well, it's,
but is it the best song?
Well, it's, I mean, this is, it's almost like the reverse problem of the Mary Poppins pick, because Shallow has been, it's now on top 40 radio,
mm-hmm.
and it's imminently repeatable. And, you know, when I'm at work and it comes on, people sing along to it. So,
yeah.
You know, it's again, it's the opposite of the problem with the Mary Poppins song. They went with the one that maybe has more meaning, but the one that isn't, you know, uplifting and enjoyable, and one you can sing along to.
Yeah.
So,
so I did actually have a separate issue, which kind of crosses a few of these nominations. How is the score for A Quiet Place not nominated?
I wondered if you're going to bring that up.
Because I do think that it was the best score of the year.
Mm-hmm.
How challenging is it to write a score for a movie that is supposed to have no sound?
Mm-hmm.
I'm disappointed. I think there's only four scores.
There's five. Like, it's Ludwig Göransson's for Black Panther, which, yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas Bertels for If Beale Street Could Talk, which, like, the music in that is really, really good. And then for Mary Poppins Returns, Isle of Dogs, and Black Klansman. And, I mean, I can't remember the Black Klansman score specifically, but the music in Spike mm-hmm. Lee movies is usually pretty solid.
Yeah.
I am actually kind of surprised for original score, because the Black Klansman score, no disrespect to Terrence Blanchard, but he borrows a lot from his score for Inside Man. In that.
Yep.
So that did seem a bit surprising that it could have gone to
Marco
Quiet Place.
Beltrami?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know who scored, but Quiet Place. But yeah. Let's leave the Oscars there.
Yeah.
And talk about the Razzies.
leave the griping to someone else.
Well, I have some gripes about the Razzies. Because now it just, like, it used to be fun. Now it seems like it's just being purposefully mean. I mean, not that it wasn't ever mean, but, you know, it just seems like they're beating up people who either don't really deserve it, or who are, like, doing a pretty good job beating up themselves. Like, Justice Smith was singled out for worst supporting actor for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. It's like, why are you blaming this person?
Yeah.
He was hardly the worst thing about Jurassic World. I mean, it's just, why him? And then Jazz St. Clair for Slender Man. It's like, there were four girls in that movie. None of them were carrying the weight. And
why is that particular one?
Why her? Why Jess Sinclair? I will defend this poor girl, because they're all equally guilty.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's fair.
Marsha Gay Harden for 50 Shades Freed. I saw 50 Shades Freed.
I know you did.
And she was barely in it. So why does she get it?
I think it's because she should know better. Why did she even accept that role?
She's Christian Grey's mother. It was a paycheck. She needed, like, I don't know.
I mean, I guess it's been a while since she's been on
house.
TV, right? She was...
Yeah, there's only so much Law and Order you can do.
That was it, Law and Order. I was like, she was on a procedural of some sort. Which one was it?
So, you know what? You come in for the day. You talk about being Christian Grey's adopted mom and how you think this new girl is great. Cash your paycheck, Marsha Gay Harden. Don't listen to the Razzies.
I will say on this, Kellyanne Conway and Melania Trump for Fahrenheit 11/9. Like, the whole point of the film is that they're terrible people.
Yeah.
So didn't they actually achieve their
Also, and Donald Trump was nominated for Worst Actor, and it's like, it's all archival footage, so it's not like they put no effort into being bad.
Yeah.
It's like, let's reward effort in being bad. Let's reward, you know, Pacific Rim Uprising, which takes like a perfectly well-made, serviceable idea about giant robots versus giant monsters, and just, I won't describe what it did to it. Or like Girl in the Spider's Web.
Oh yeah, you were disappointed with that.
I mean, it just, good source material. You have a great actress in Claire Foy, and it's like, who directed this? Why is this here? Or The Predator.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, Shane Black should know
better. Yeah, he should know better.
He should literally know
better. Yeah, if Marsha Gay Harden gets nominated because she should know better, then Shane Black should also.
Shane Black should know better, not just because he's a good filmmaker, because he was in the original Predator.
Mm-hmm.
He should, anyway.
I am disappointed to see, now I haven't watched either movie, but both The Happy Time Murders and Winchester received so many nominations, because those are both sort of on my, like, I'd like to watch that movie. I've got them, you know.
I think they're easy targets because Happy Time Murders didn't deliver what it promised.
Well, it's kind of a tough.
Yeah, it's a tough needle to thread.
It's a tough genre, I think.
And then, you know, Winchester because it's got Helen Mirren in it. And I guess, that may be another one of those situations where maybe she should know better.
Hmm.
But, I actually feel sorry for many of the nominees here. Like, Gotti, like, John Travolta. Like, John Travolta has managed to, like, we talked in last week about M. Night Shyamalan and his roller coaster career. Mm-hmm. John Travolta's probably another one of those people that's, like, lived the roller coaster. Like, you go back to the 70s with Welcome Back, Kotter, and Grease, and Saturday Night Fever, and then there's the 80s, and you, like, crash land at Look Who's Talking 3. And then finally he comes up again with Pulp Fiction, and he's on a bit of a ride there, and now we're down to, like, Gotti, directed by, like, the worst bunch of the Entourage. And prove me wrong that Kevin Connolly isn't the worst. Anyway, this, like, slapdash direct-to-video about, like, John Gotti, come on.
I mean, they thought it was going to be the next... What was the name of the O.J. trial?
American Crime Story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They thought it was going to do that. It didn't, apparently.
I mean, it was on every worst of list. I mean, so even that was like low-hanging fruit. We put the Chainsaw Awards on here because I knew that would appeal to you.
Yes, I appreciate it. I did. So I did try to go and vote for them. I will say it is a pain because you must vote for everyone. And I'm like, there are things here where I have not actually seen.
You haven't seen all the nominees.
So how am I supposed to choose? And even still, when I'm like, okay, I've seen one or two films on this list, can I really just choose the one that I've seen because I liked it? Is that really fair? So I really did not appreciate the fact that voting on each one was required. So I did, by about the end, I was like, you know, I don't feel good about this. I'm not going to submit this.
They should send out screeners for the Chainsaw Awards.
They should. I'd take it.
I admit to being a bit disappointed that Cargo wasn't nominated. It was only nominated for Best First Feature, which, you know, it's fine. I guess that's a nice. But Cargo is like one of those. It's a film that makes you realize that maybe there's still some life in the zombie genre. And it's like this incredibly, like, heartfelt. It breaks your heart at the end of Cargo.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
It's good. It's very good.
Good.
And it's like life-affirming and heartbreaking. And the end is just so beautiful. It's like everything The Walking Dead isn't.
Oh. That, I mean,
where it, like, Walking Dead constantly goes into this morass of nihilism.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you come out of Cargo, you feel pretty good.
Yeah. Like, there's actually something worth fighting for.
Yeah. Life is okay. I was also disappointed that Andy Matichak didn't get, like, a Best Supporting Actress nomination for Halloween, because I thought she was good in Halloween.
Who? Oh, the
she's the teen daughter in Halloween.
Granddaughter. The granddaughter.
Technically. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, she definitely should have been in there because she was pretty good. I thought
all these awards are disappointing.
I know. Come on. But again, still a Quiet Place score, not here.
Oh, wasn't it?
No, it was not. Oh. I was like, really? Not even here?
Because, like, Marco Beltrami, you would think it would be the John Williams of the Chainsaw Awards,
mm-hmm.
that he would just put out a score and get nominated.
Yeah, though, to be fair, so Tom York did the score for Suspiria.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's automatically going to be on there. Yeah. And Johan Johansson did a score for Mandy, and he's pretty well known, too. Mm-hmm. Though the other ones, I'm like, I don't know. The score for Hereditary is on there. It was pretty good. But honestly, A Quiet Place was the best film score of the year, people.
I have a feeling you will be vindicated in 5 years, like all the people who will realize Green Book is the crash of 2018.
Yeah.
I will say that before we wrap up the awards portion of the show, that it's interesting that the popular Oscar has sort of been disproven with this year's nominees, because you have Bohemian Rhapsody, which I think has made $700 million worldwide, and Black Panther, which has made over $1 billion worldwide. And you have to wonder what this would look like if they just shuttled those movies off to a popular category or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just, you know. We mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody because the man who directed at least a good portion of Bohemian Rhapsody, Bryan Singer, there was an article in The Atlantic, a rather harrowing and upsetting article.
Yeah, it took me 3 days to read
Atlantic.
It.
Yeah, it's a hard read, about all the allegations about Bryan Singer. These are not new allegations because, you know, some of it dates back to the 90s, the late
90s. I think the first official allegation against him was... was it the 2014 one?
Mm-hmm.
But the stories that are being told, and you know, to be fair, for due process, these are just people speaking to a journalist,
right.
And not actually, you know,
in a court. It's not.
Yeah,
affidavit.
These are people who have
anything.
Decided not to bother pursuing any sort of criminal justice, but they have shared their story, and these stories have also been very well vetted by the journalists.
Yes.
But yeah, the stories themselves are going back to at least 99,
mm-hmm.
98, that sort of stuff.
It's amazing. I mean, it sort of gives you an insight of how Harvey Weinstein got away with it for so long, or how anybody gets away with it. Just this feeling of... you sort of get... I mean, that's the feeling for a lot of these men who are young men when it happens. Some of them 14, 15.
Yeah.
That you just kind of get swept up into it and then swept back out. And, you know, some of them ended up with drug problems or prostituting themselves.
Yeah.
And it's almost worse than some of the Weinstein stuff. Not that we want to weigh offenses.
It's different. And it's different.
It's different because for some of the women... they just had to see Harvey Weinstein naked. But there was also allegations of rape, too. But most of the time, it was just Harvey Weinstein looking for sexual favors.
It was harassment,
favors.
Sexual harassment.
What happened to some of these boys when they were boys is just it's almost like sex slavery.
Absolutely.
You know, and certainly rape is a word that's almost too generous for what happened to them.
Mm-hmm. And it's really challenging because, of course, there's been the issues with pedophilia in the priesthood for years, and people sort of talk about it more openly, and people come out with their stories, but it's not the only place that this sort of thing happens, and it's so challenging because it's ingrained into the culture, right? People don't really, you know, you read this, and it's just like... if you change some of the names and change the location from LA to, you know, small town Massachusetts, this is clearly a pedophile sex ring.
Yeah.
But because you have it in a place where there are all sorts of other things around it, but culturally, right? There is sort of a culture of passing sexual favors for
right
jobs,
yeah.
You know, and not that doesn't make it okay, but it's a lot more ingrained in the culture. And then you have the culture too of young men who are homosexual who don't know what to do with that, don't know how to express it, can't share those feelings right with people their own age. So I know that there is sort of a culture of young men needing a slightly older, more experienced man to help them sort of shepherd through
right
that. But this, it like, yeah, like what I said, you know, you just change some of the names and some of the places and it's straight up like, yes, sex slavery, as you said.
Yeah. I mean, it speaks to how, it speaks to the short, you know, as you were talking there, it just made me think, it speaks to the shortcomings of sex ed, or at least how sex ed, how we probably had it growing mm-hmm up, which was like very mechanical about the, which parts go into which other parts, which yeah of course is very heterocentric and yeah does nothing with the fact of, as you said, trying to help young men understand their sexuality
mm-hmm
if they do have feelings
yeah
for the same sex.
And I mean, to be fair, even for heterosexual sex, it doesn't
sure
really help
yeah
women very much understand,
no.
Oh, what do I get out of this? So it's, yeah, our education levels around this, because we're Western society, we are prudes.
Yeah. Although in my grade 8 gym teacher's defense, he did tell us that it's harder for women to achieve orgasm than it is for men mechanically. So
excellent.
He
good
did
for
put
him
that in our ear in advance. So bravo, Mr. Kavanaugh,
mm-hmm
wherever you are. Yeah, it's, but you know, back to the allegations. One of the things that sticks in my mind, though, is that this is, and the Atlantic article touches on this too, is how much success can cover things up inadvertently.
Yeah.
And Bryan Singer's still attached to a movie. He's
yeah
still attached to direct Red Sonja.
Yeah.
And that in spite of, A, the allegations, but also B, in all the stuff that has also come out, just in terms of his on-set attitude
mm-hmm
and the stuff that happened with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
About, like, getting in feuds with
actors,
cast and crew
yeah
and disappearing for days. And
mm-hmm and
yeah
not that I want to let him off the hook remotely,
yeah,
but some of these allegations, you read it and you understand, if you're to believe them, which I do,
mm-hmm
this is a man who has some serious flaws.
Mm-hmm.
Issues
mm-hmm
sexually, which he is not dealing with in a healthy manner.
No.
And I don't believe that that's going, you know, that people who suffer from these sorts of issues can just easily go about the rest of their life and pretend that they're normal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure there's going to be a certain amount of, like, fear of getting caught, shame about what you're doing, all
right
of that sort of stuff that's going to then bleed out into addiction and,
yeah,
you know, poor behavior and all those other things. You know, I'm reading, and this is the thing, like, I've sort of heard about Bryan Singer's on-set stuff for a while, but I've never really looked into it. But, you know, not showing up and being essentially high on at work, people are like, you are clearly,
and, yeah,
you know, you're,
yeah,
you're on opioids right now. Like, you're not,
yeah,
you're not good at your job right now. I'm like,
yeah,
this is, everything about this is not, it's not serving him either.
Right.
Right. Like,
yeah,
it's maddening to me to watch people just let these things slide by. And I'm officially, I, it's well past the time I should have been officially done with Bryan Singer, but I'm definitely officially done. I will never see any movie that has his name attached to it, even if it was, we hired him and he filmed almost all the movie.
He made it to 3 weeks before the end of
Principal, which is disappointing, you know, because I am a person who thinks Superman Returns was,
well, that's a twofer because Kevin Spacey's in it.
I know. I don't watch it anymore, and I'm like, Brandon Routh, please do Superman again so I can have another Brandon Routh Superman.
Well, you'll always have the Atom
it's
on Legends
true
of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to try and get some of that awfulness out of our system and then talk about The Kid Who Would Be King, which is a much more uplifting story.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So because it kind of, you know, kills two birds with one stone, both in terms of some of the subject matter of the Oscars and in terms of the thematic material of the movie of the week, let's play an oldie but a goldie, an underappreciated classic from the Queen Library. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
To learn the basics of swordcraft, you will need a weapon each. A simple duplication spell for metallic objects should suffice. What are you doing, boy?
I do magic tricks for a hobby, but I'm no good at duplication illusions. So I'm going to video what you do and try and copy it.
I'll be most impressed if you succeed.
Wow!
Now, you have an army to fight, a demon to slay, a country to save. So let us begin.
What's he doing?
Some food, a reward for once you've vanquished your foes.
And that was a clip from The Kid That Would Be King. It is the new film from Joe Cornish, and it stars Lewis Ashbourne Circus, Dean Chumo, Tom Taylor, Rihanna Doris, Angus Imrie, Rebecca Ferguson, and Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard. No, it so if you don't know Joe Cornish, he's kind of like always like kind of around these sorts of projects. Like, he co-wrote the screenplay to Ant-Man when Edgar Wright was working on it. He co-wrote The Adventures of Tintin with Edgar Wright. That's the Spielberg computer animated Tintin. Motion capture is what I'm thinking of. Yep. And then he did Attack the Block, which is a favorite of a lot of people. It was the film that launched the career of John Boyega. And this is his follow-up almost 8 years later. So it's basically Arthurian legend, but through the lens of this kid who would be king.
Yep.
He has to pull the sword from a cinder block and raise an army at his school to fight the evil forces of Morgana Le Fay or Morgan Le Fay.
I mean, you know how the Arthurian legend goes.
You know it. And if you don't know it, the movie recaps it briefly at the beginning.
And then through the rest of the plot.
Yes. Pretty much.
Which is great. I mean, I expected it to be... I mean, this is the thing, right? Like, Arthurian legend, we all know it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really going to do something all that new. So let's just sit back and enjoy it. Like, there's a reason it's a story that we just keep coming back to.
Yeah, and I think it shakes it up a bit in new ways. I mean, I think the last time we had Arthurian legend on the big screen was the Guy Ritchie King Arthur Legend of the Sword, which I didn't particularly have a problem with. I thought it was enjoyable enough, but this kind of, I think, sort of reorientates things to play into not just the original intention of the legend, but also plays into things going on in our world. And I mean, it's fairly not subtle in the way it does it. It's kind of heavy-handed in its way. But, you know, there is something to this idea that, the world's in bad shape. We have a lot of people following a lot of really bad people, stirring up resentment, sort of wallowing in hate, if not outright giving up to hate. And the world needs someone who just, you know, sees someone bullying their friend and won't stand for it, even if the bully stands...
Yep, stands right up to them.
A full foot taller than them. And I like that positive message, and it's not saccharine at all. It's very fun and easygoing, and I think the kids are great, and Angus Emery, who plays young Merlin, is so funny and really, really leans into it. And is really enjoyable. So yeah, it's just an all around, I think, enjoyable film.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, that you're right. Yes, there were clearly messages here, but then I think that they were, you know, in some ways. It's introduced as like a huge message, right? Like the land is leaderless and people are without hope. But really it just came back down to a personal, like this is about you changing you, right? Like lean into your strengths and, you know, make sure that your weaknesses are, that you deal
overcome
with them.
Overcome your weaknesses.
Yes, overcome them.
Don't bury them and don't. It's a good, solid message, and I did like how it, although the Arthurian legend is partially a sort of a chosen one kind of thing, that's ultimately that's not kind of the message of the film, that you can make yourself, and you can choose to be the one, you are not necessarily a chosen one, and I did like that payoff, that in the end, you know, you choose to be the person you be.
Yeah.
And
and the fact, too, that being... a leader doesn't mean being the leader.
Yeah.
It means being a leader. And yes, you are only a 12-year-old. You're not going to, you know, save the entire country.
Right.
But right here, right now, you've made a choice, and now you can continue to go through life as a leader and help other people, you know, lift them up, which is great.
Right. And I like that the message is also... Don't lie to your mom.
Yeah.
And also don't lie to your kid. And you know, that there's like an amount of domestic strife there that you don't really appreciate. And it uses a great double meaning where, you know, his mom says to him, oh, your father had his demons. And Alex, who's the young boy, the kid who would be king, if you will, thinks, you know, because at this point he's learning about having pulled the sword out of the stone, he's learning about... what's going on, and Morgana and demons. And the demons were a great effect, by the way.
They were
really well designed. And so he's like, oh yeah, he had like literal demons. He was from the seaside town that King Arthur was also from, according to legend. And so like, I am descended from kings. Now I get why my dad isn't around. And it turns out to be, that's not how life works.
Yeah.
Sometimes your dad's just a jerk and your mom's trying to do the best she can.
Yep.
And again, it's not subtle, but I it's not,
it's
done.
I don't feel it's like super heavy handed though.
No,
either.
It's not in an after school way either. Because what's funny is, I don't know if you saw, if it was when you saw it, there was a trailer for Breakthrough, which is the super Christy new movie about the kid who falls through the ice.
And, and I imagine
and Reverend Topher Grace. Right,
I know. I mean, eventually one day he won't look like a boy child, right? I mean, I love Topher Grace. I love him. But I'm like, are we supposed to take him seriously as like the pastor? Like they're a spiritual leader? Yes, I did see that trailer. And I did find it to be, Emotionorama. It's like an emotional roller coaster. Here are all the things. You're going to feel them. Ready? Ready? Feel it.
It's just like... To pause here for a second, the kid who would be king. Topher Grace as the pastor. It's just because when you see Topher Grace, he's like the secret dirtbag. Like, or maybe even the not-so-secret dirtbag.
Like when he's Venom.
when he's Venom, or in Black Klansman where he's David Duke.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Or in Predators when, like, he's part of, like, the group that's on the alien planet. You don't find out until the end why the Predators took him. It's because he's a serial killer. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, here's good, clean Christian Topher Grace.
I believe Topher Grace is everything.
And there's also, I think there's, like, literally a scene in Ocean's 12 where he comes to Brad Pitt having, like, killed a guy. Mm-hmm.
By the way, spoiler alert for every Topher Grace movie.
Yeah, he's always there's always a body in the trunk. Yeah.
Back to the kid who would be king.
Back
though.
To the kid who yeah. would be king.
Yeah, so it wasn't heavy-handed. Can we talk about the special effects a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I agree that the whatever they called those things.
Yeah, I can't. They should just call them demons or ghost riders.
The demons, the ghost riders. They were, yes, a really nicely done effect. It did feel a little Lord of the Rings when they were, like, running away from them at some points, but they didn't look like they didn't have that look at all. They had a totally different.
There's literally a sequence where they're chasing them through the woods on horseback.
I was like, I've seen this part of the movie before.
The music kind of picks up to, like, it sounds very Howard Shore-ish. Because I remember the music from that sequence in Lord of the Rings where it's like, dun, 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 dun. It just felt like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the action sequences were really well done. Mm-hmm. I thought the one with when the demons are chasing them through the streets, that's a lot of fun. And then they get in the car and do the Mario Kart maneuvers.
Yeah.
I think that one was especially well done. Mm-hmm. That one really got your heart rate going.
Yeah. I feel like they spent so much maybe time and money on getting that effect done really well so that they were, you know, scary. They looked like real things to be scared of, that it cost them a little bit in other places. Like the scene that you played, which was them learning swordplay essentially against these inanimate trees. Ants. Yeah. And it was fine. Like I'm not going to judge this movie based on special effects. It's you know, a kid's movie, and the story really is the point. But that particular effect, I was like, oh, it's the middle of the day and the trees, like they didn't, I can't imagine how much work it would have been to make it look like super good anyways. But that one in particular, I was like, some people who probably wouldn't come to this movie anyways would be really annoyed by this special effect.
And also it's there may have been some sort of misunderstanding there, but it's also meant to be like Merlin's like setting them up to have a fight, but the trees are actually training them to sword fight, which is interesting. I think that could have been tighter. I think my one big complaint is that the whole movie could have been tighter. It goes almost right up to the line of 2 hours. And there's this whole sojourn where they go into the underworld where Morgana has been, I guess, sequestered.
Trapped. She's been trapped.
Trapped. Imprisoned. Yeah. What have you. Whatever euphemism you would like to use. But I almost feel like it's unnecessary.
And it was, like, all of it was too easy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. They get there and they just get in and whatever. I was like, really? Is that it?
Yeah, and the friends are useless in that scene, which is actually fine because I think that in a lot of the earlier scenes, Alex has a very sort of Harry Potter thing, and by that I mean when you watch the Harry Potter movies, a lot of the action is taking place around Harry. Harry is not the driver of a lot of action, and that's what it sort of felt like. And going into the catacombs, at least you have at least the hero driving the action.
Yeah,
but then I was like, he stabs her, and it's like, well, that's the end of that chapter. Yeah. And it's like, that is the end of that chapter?
Yeah.
But then they have the big fight at the school. Yeah.
Which is interesting that you say that, because two things come to mind. So first was during the fight at the school, when it came to the big climax, I did kind of get there and go, okay, but this kid has done nothing yet to actually, like, everybody else has had a part in trapping Morgana, and he's done nothing. But then also, as you were just describing about the Harry Potter thing, it reminded me of my very own words where I said, there is more to being a leader. It's not about being the leader.
Right.
Right? So I do think that the person probably should be the one to strike the final blow. But the fact that he was able to rally so many people around him and come up with an incredibly intense plan in 2 hours.
They were really able to home alone that school. Really
efficiently. I do think, you know, it is a bit of a flaw, as you say, of some of the rest of the movie, that there things go on a little bit long, so that the end just kind of happens suddenly, and it's a, you know, then it's done.
Yeah.
I also think that they definitely had some trouble conceptualizing Morgana.
Yeah, which is, it makes me sad, because mm-hmm. they get a really great actress in Rebecca Ferguson, who has sort of proved herself in these things, because she's been in 2 Mission Impossible movies, and she's easily the best part about Rogue Nation. They kind of sideline her a bit in Fallout, but she's easily like the best female lead in mm-hmm. those movies, that series of movies. So she's like really charismatic. She's really great with the physical stuff, but she's not given a lot to do.
Yeah. And I think they just, again, I think they did such a great job with her demons,
mm-hmm.
And worked so hard to make sure that they seemed scary, that when it came to her, it was like, oh, we have, what are we, how are we going to make her seem scary? She's just a witch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and I didn't even realize it was Rebecca Ferguson until the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, we only really saw her face in that one scene where she was talking to Merlin.
Yeah, when she confronts Merlin.
Yeah.
And there's no build up to that at all, unfortunately, in terms of like what their
I think you're just supposed to know the Arthurian legend and know the story of Merlin and Morgana.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Patrick Stewart, I think Patrick Stewart is well used, but there's not enough Patrick Stewart.
I don't know if there's not enough. Or
but I mean, the adults in general, I guess, mm-hmm. maybe because it's a kid's story and that's fine. But, you know, it does strike. It's very straightforward in its sort of interpretation of Arthurian legend, because I do enjoy kind of like the feminist reading of Morgana, that, you know, because she was a woman and perhaps maybe had a better claim to the mm-hmm. crown, but she's sidelined because she's a woman.
Yeah. Because that's just not the way that royalty works.
Right. At least until very recently.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things, it's not very long, but it's probably longer than maybe the attention span of most kids. Although I didn't notice any of the kids in the theater that mm-hmm. I was seeing it being particularly restless.
Yep. When I saw it, there was one very young girl who, with her mom, left to go to the washroom. But other than that, I didn't see any, you know, leaving to go to the bathroom or restless or anything like that.
Or phones out.
And I did see, you know, while we were waiting to get into the movie, that it I feel like it was really well targeted to that middle age of kids, you know, 12, 13, who maybe don't really want to hang out with their parents anymore, but aren't going to go see this movie with their friends because that's not cool, right? Because it's a kid's movie.
Right.
But then, you know, there they were with their sibling and their parents.
Yeah, I think there was a birthday party there, because I saw it at a matinee. And so I think there was maybe a birthday party there. But yeah, it seems that it finds that sweet spot, it you know, where it has an adult appeal. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, the kid in you. Appeals to the kids and the kid in you.
Yeah.
To put a kind of bow on it, I guess. It just, that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
And I think when you see a lot of kids' movies, it's really hard to find that very fine line.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this manages to find that line. And
I do think it does it, though, at the risk of being really good. Like, this movie was inoffensive. It was well done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the few flaws are very minor flaws.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like I raced out of the theater thinking, oh, I've got to tell people to go see this movie.
Right.
It was just like, you know, I was describing it to a friend who was a parent last night, and I said I had gone to see it. And he said, well, you know, should I go see it? And I was like, I feel like as a parent, if you're bringing your kids, you would come out going, well, that wasn't the worst movie that I had to go see with my kids. Like, I feel like that's probably
Yeah. And you're not going to have to hear a song on repeat for years on end either. So, I mean, that's a bonus. But it's, it's tricky in that regard, I think, that maybe in terms of rewatchability, in terms of, I guess maybe just straight marketing. I've seen a lot of people react to the trailers and not react well to the trailers, let's say. And I get that because I had sort of a similar feeling seeing the trailers. It's like, oh, it seemed... I mean, if Joe Cornish's name wasn't on it, I would have had definite reservations. But because he's proved himself, you know, I was willing to give this a try. But yeah, the trailers don't really sell this as, you know, you have to see this.
Yeah.
Or this is something... And it, also having it open in January doesn't... say a lot either.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like there's sort of middling faith in the movie and maybe not enough faith in itself either.
Yeah, because it just feels like it's good and well executed, but it's just missing that little bit of magic.
Yeah.
To, you know,
pun intended.
Be not literal. but yeah, it's just like missing this tiny thing and I'm not really sure what it is.
Yeah.
But this thing that, like, I kind of left and went, I mean, I don't have anything bad to say about the film.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I have anything to, like, rave about it.
No, I think that's valid. And, you know, it might be a money thing, too. It just, you know, if they had an extra couple of bucks to rub together, or they could have done something really cool with Morgana, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that it's not... it's not like a slam dunk like that, even though it's, you know, a perfectly fine movie. It's well made. The message is good. The acting is good. The creature design is fun. You know, and if, you know, I had kids or if my niece was a little bit older, I would have no problem, you know, making this an afternoon. But, yeah, it's missing something. And I don't know what that is. I mean, and if that's the worst we could say about a sophomore effort from a director.
Yeah, I mean.
It just, it didn't wow us.
Yeah.
it's not making me want to go buy the super ticket.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I will say, though, the main actor, Louis Ashbourne Circus, in some ways, I kind of wish I didn't realize who he was. Like, I didn't know who he was before I went in. But of course, because I did know that he's Andy Serkis's son, I went in immediately going, okay, let me see how he does. It's, you know, what's he got?
Impress me, kid.
Not so much the impress me, but like, you know, does he look like his dad? Does he act like, you know, whatever.
But can you play a talking ape?
I think he could.
Yeah, the kids were good.
I feel like British children actors are just generally better than North American children actors. I don't know.
Maybe it's the accent.
It's always the accent. They sound so much smarter than us.
Could be. We'll have to leave that there, though. That's a question we'll ponder another time. So that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it, and you can find this and other past episodes of the show on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can also find us on the social medias. I don't know why I added a plural to that.
Because there are many medias.
Apparently. Anyway, we're on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show and on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And Candace, you are on the medias, so where can people find you on the medias?
Yes, you can find me on the medias at Cinn48, that's CINN48 on, you know, just Google it. You can find me on all of the mediums.
I don't think that makes it better. I will be back on CFRU tomorrow, speaking of mediums. Thursday at 5 p.m., news and politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I am on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.ca for my local political stuff. And stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And yes, we will be back next week, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. for more end credits, and we will see you then.